Green Sense Radio is brought to you by Green Sense Farms. We're changing the world with sustainable indoor vertical farming, growing more with less. Our leafy greens are sold live, so they burst with flavor. Visit greensensefarms.com and watch us grow.
Welcome to Green Sense, a weekly look at the people, policies, and innovations that are changing our world. Here's Robert Colangelo.
Hey, that's me. Welcome to Green Sense. Bob Kessler, executive producer, will tell us more about who we're going to meet this week.
There continues to be a lot of exciting developing technology around indoor farms, but also integrating kind of old technology with greenhouses. So we will be talking with a greenhouse and indoor farm expert all the way from Spain. Potashu, that is a company that owns several restaurants in the city of Indianapolis, Indiana. Potashu is also doing a lot to end childhood hunger there. So we'll meet the founder of the company.
All coming up on this edition of Green Sense. While indoor vertical farming has been getting a lot of attention lately, greenhouses, which have been around much longer, are getting much more sophisticated. By combining indoor vertical farms with greenhouses, you have a powerful combination of technology to sustainably grow crops indoor, conserving both soil and water. Juan Miguel Morales Sandoval is with the Spanish greenhouse manufacturer and builder Rufipa, and he joins us now all the way from Spain. Juan, welcome to Green Sense.
Thank you very much. Welcome, and thank you to you to have this time with me.
Juan, in the simplest terms, describe what a greenhouse is.
Well, the greenhouse is a structure. It's an architectural structure made mainly by steel, and it is covered usually for different materials. Either it can be polycarbonate, polyethylene, or glass. And with this structure, we can achieve the right weather conditions inside of this structure in order to create the perfect environment for the plant. In this way, we can have a plant surviving, living, and having a very great life in this environment. And this, and when the plant is comfortable and has got good conditions, it is highly productive and healthy at the same time.
So greenhouses can range from a simple hoop house to a sophisticated glass house with supplemental LED lighting and automation controls that regulate climate and growing inputs. Yeah. Why is there such a range in types of greenhouses?
Yeah, because the difference, it is, first of all, what kind of crop we are going to have. It is not the same to have tomato or a different crop of, like, for example, lettuce or strawberry. And also, the difference of the different conditions and features of the greenhouse depends on the weather conditions. We always try to find the best locations in order to adapt the greenhouse to the climate conditions, to the environment of this. We try always to adapt to the nature. We don't want to, if possible, we don't want to force the nature. But sometimes we need to try to convert the conditions which are very difficult or very hard outside, and to make it inside of the greenhouse comfortable conditions in the greenhouse.
You build greenhouses all around the world. Is there a climate that's most difficult to deal with?
Yeah, definitely. The extremes are always the most difficult weather conditions, especially the most difficult condition for vegetables to produce are, it sounds strange, but it has a very logical explanation. The most difficult conditions to produce in greenhouses and in agriculture in general are the tropical countries with high humidity and high temperature. They are the most difficult and complicated conditions, even more than to produce tomatoes or cucumbers or lettuce in the north of Russia. It is not a problem. The problem is to produce tomatoes in Nigeria or produce tomatoes in Bangladesh.
Why is this, Juan?
Because the plant is very sensitive, has got the behavior of the plant has got different terms of growing, and if you give to the plant too much temperature, too much hot, and too much humidity, the plant is very tired. So it's very difficult. All its energy goes to try to refresh itself, and it is very difficult for the plant to produce the crop. And also, this is combined with high humidity. High humidity is in a rate more than 70 or 80%. It's the perfect environment for diseases. Let's call fungus or bacteria, and even insects. And then under these conditions, we need to decrease the temperature in the greenhouse. And when you need to decrease the temperature in the greenhouse or in the protected structure, it is very complicated because you need a lot of technology, very high cost technology, and the energy consumption is too much, which means that sometimes is not feasible in terms of economic.
Yeah, a great explanation. Can you tell us what crops grown in a greenhouse grow best, and what crops are difficult to grow economically?
Well, definitely in the greenhouse, you economically, definitely, you should forget all the cereals. Definitely, you can forget. It's technically, it is possible to produce, for example, potatoes in a greenhouse, but it is not feasible. Why? Because the cost of investment is too much for the cost on the revenue of the potato, for example, or the maize or the wheat. But for example, the most common and popular crop to be produced in the greenhouse are the tomatoes, cucumber, eggplant, courgette. But also is produced, you can produce easily lettuce in the greenhouse if the weather conditions are correct, and in some months, not in many cases, not the whole year.
Why do crops grown in a greenhouse conserve soil and water versus a field farm?
Very easy, because we have a closed system. In fact, it is very similar to the vertical farming irrigation and drainage system. Everything is a closed system, and you have a production in the production is made in with the following the hydroponic irrigation. So the crop is growing in cocoa bags or rock bull bags, and it is produced on this in soilless. Soilless surface, and then you produce there, and the drainage of the plant, which contains also fertilizers, goes to the to a drainage tank, and in this drainage tank we clean this drainage, this water, and we reuse again the fertilizers and the water. So the consumption of water is really, really, really effective, and we save a lot of water. In fact, this is the future. In many, many regions in the planet, especially in your region where we are, we have a large scarce of water. Definitely, this is the future to save energy and water.
Well, our company is partnered with Rufipa to integrate vertical farms with greenhouses. From your standpoint and perspective, explain, why is this a novel new approach to sustainably grow crops?
Yeah, because it's a win and win situation. The greenhouse has got its weak points, because you can control the environment in the greenhouse. Let's say most of the year in many cases, but in some cases not the whole year. For this reason, you need to have an 100% environmentally controlled area, which is the vertical farming. And also, the vertical farming, to be financially and economically profitable, you need to have also attached to it for some crops, like for example, tomato or potato or cucumber or other crops, you need to combine the area with a greenhouse. Why? Because you need a space. You need a space to grow. The volume of the plants that in the greenhouse in some cases have, they are more than 4.5 meters height. And this for vertical farming is a large volume. So this is the way of this is why I say before win and win situation. We get the advantages and the good and the good points of the vertical farming, and also the vertical farming gets the benefits of the greenhouse.
Juan, this is an exciting time to be in agriculture. There's been so many technological advancements in the last 10 years that are allowing us to grow a lot more crop with less inputs and to be able to control pests. What do you see as the most exciting advancement in the industry since you've been here?
Yeah, the industry is growing so much, and it is not only in one field. The growing is especially growing in vertical farming. Vertical farming was like 10 years ago, something like a new industry, and nobody knew about this. Now it is a reality, and the future is there, definitely, 100%. It is like, okay, like 20 years ago or 25 years ago, nobody thought about the possibilities of the smartphones, and the vertical farming is there. Also, and the combination and the energy energy consequences of the use of LED lights in the greenhouses. Once we have with the LED lights with the cheaper cost, you know, the vertical farming and especially also the greenhouses will grow very much, and we will see greenhouses in much, much higher areas. But in fact, the amount and because the pressure by the world population is so big, normal greenhouses are also going to be settled in many countries. Like for example, we are doing different and special structures of crop protection for crops which before we never thought about them, and we never thought about the possibilities. For example, we have one customer in Madagascar who is protecting the asparagus plant. We never thought about this, but there are problems in the roots, and the greenhouses are there to protect it. So, you know, the opportunities are everywhere, honestly, everywhere.
One of the big changes I've seen in agriculture, being a newcomer to the market, is the cannabis and hemp production. I've never seen an industry take off so rapidly. What are the pros and cons to hemp and cannabis production to agriculture?
Yeah. The thing is, I didn't mention before the cannabis industry and the hemp industry, but definitely, it is a market with is growing so fast, and is with so big a strength that it has a big meaning. It is a big tendency in many countries. The hemp and the cannabis industry for pharmaceutical purposes is a industry which is going to create thousands of jobs all over the world. Countries like Canada and USA are already there, but new countries are entering in this market. For example, Spain, Portugal, and other European countries, African countries like South Africa, Lesotho, Zimbabwe. Also, Uganda want to start producing cannabis for pharmaceutical purposes. Australia, Argentina, Uruguay, everywhere. Colombia will have 1,000 hectares of greenhouses for cannabis purpose, because they want to change their farmers for illegal production of some kind of product to legal cannabis.
Juan, how can the integration of vertical farms and greenhouses help aid the growth in the hemp and the cannabis business?
Yeah, because if you can produce very healthy plant in the vertical farming, more than in the traditional system, and with more, much faster, but also you need the space in the greenhouse. So the combination of both will save time, will have the green, the product in total, it will be cheaper and with better quality.
Juan, we can talk forever. There's so much to cover on this topic. I appreciate you staying up late and contacting us all the way from Spain. So thank you for your time, and look forward to talking to you in the future.
Thank you, and call me anytime. It's a pleasure.
That's Juan Miguel Morales Sandoval with the greenhouse manufacturer and builder Rufipa, joining us from Spain. I'm Robert Colangelo. This is GreenSense. Visit GreenSenseFarms.com to subscribe to our podcast.
GreenSense Radio is brought to you by GreenSense Farms. We're changing the world with our sustainable indoor vertical farming, growing more with less. Our leafy greens are sold live, so they burst with flavor. Visit GreenSenseFarms.com and watch us grow.
If you find yourself in Indianapolis, I recommend the restaurant Napoli's for maybe public greens or perhaps crispy bird. They're among several vibrant eating establishments owned and operated by the Patichou Company. From this successful organization, the Patichou Foundation was established, which aims to end childhood hunger in the Indianapolis area. We're joined by Martha Hoover, who is the visionary and founder of the establishment. Martha, welcome to GreenSense.
Thank you for having me on.
Well, as I mentioned, you are the visionary and founder behind the concept at Patichou. You have a very interesting background. You were a former sex crimes prosecutor, and then you turned restaurateur. Tell us more about how you transitioned from a prosecutor into a restaurateur, and more importantly, why?
Well, the why is probably the best part of the story. I am just a food person, always have been. And in 1989, I was faced with the fact that I could not take my children, my family, we could not go to a restaurant in Indianapolis that served the quality of food that I was used to serving, that I wanted my children and my family to eat. I opened my first restaurant in the neighborhood in which I live, was able to walk to the restaurant every day for the construction process. We opened and truly, I opened for them, but we opened for the entire community as well. The tagline that we've used since day one of the restaurant is that we are a student union for adults, really hearkening back to my days on a Big Ten campus where the student union, this is obviously very much ahead of Starbucks and other small coffee shops coming on board. The student union was really the center of life on a college campus, and I remember that hub of life very fondly, and wanted to recreate a hub in my own neighborhood that was a restaurant. So that's what we did. I further complicated the story because I opened up my first restaurant having never worked in a restaurant. And I always like to say that what should have been a recipe for disaster has proved to be a true recipe for success for us.
Where did the name Patichou come from?
Well, as you mentioned, I was a sex crimes prosecutor, and meaning that I had gone to law school, and law school for me was very much a default education. I didn't ever really believe that I would be practicing law. I fell into, after law school, I fell into some very interesting job opportunities, one of which was to work in a newly formed sex crimes unit in Marion County, Indianapolis, Indiana, at a time that was very interesting, particularly for that area of law, because it was such a new area of law. I really enjoyed the job. I enjoyed what we were creating. I enjoyed the advocacy portion of it. I did, however, take no pleasure in sending people to jail. I did that with a very heavy heart. And I used to always go into my prosecutors, the person I work for, Steve Goldsmith, into his office and tell him how I thought that if we could maybe educate people or give them job opportunities, that we would really reduce crime. And he used to tell me that I was a cream puff. Lo and behold, when I opened up my own restaurant, I named it after that very cream puff. Pot au chou is French for cream puff. So it was very tongue-in-cheek.
Well, that's a great story, and that's great for radio. So explain the relationship between pot au chou. I can't pronounce it.
It's pot au chou, but we always say if you can't pronounce it, as long as you come in and support us, we're fine with that, whatever you call us.
So explain the relationship between pot au chou and the for-profit restaurant company.
Well, Cafe Pot au Chou is Pot au Chou. My company is Pot au Chou Inc. And Pot au Chou Inc. has under its umbrella several restaurant concepts. We own 14 restaurants. We also established 5 years ago a not-for-profit called the Pot au Chou Foundation. And is that what you're asking about the Pot au Chou Foundation, how it was established and what it does?
Yes.
One of the things we really have company values that have, you know, that were started in 1989 and are part of our corporate DNA. And one of those values is that the company would have a radically different and radically better connection to its community. And every year, as the company has become more profitable and more stable, we would do something for the community, and we've been very active participants in our community of Indianapolis. However, at the end of every giving cycle, I would look back and I would really question what our impact was. And we started doing this in the early years, and our commitment has only grown. It has never wavered. And about 6 years ago, I was just incredibly frustrated. I felt that the resources that we were spending in the community were not really ending any of the problems in the community. And at the same time, I became remarkably aware of the issue in our very community regarding specifically childhood hunger. And you have to realize Indianapolis is not just the largest populated city in the state of Indiana. It's also our capital city. But Indiana is a historically agricultural state. And we are located smack dab in the middle of the United States, a first world country. And it just seemed so remarkably unacceptable that in Indianapolis, in the middle of an agricultural state, we, in the middle of the United States, a first world nation, we had such significant issues with hunger, and so many of the people affected by our hunger issues are children. And we decided at that point in time that really our best use of our resources was to try to be very, very specific, laser-like focused on what we could do to impact those children. And that's when I started the Pot au Chou Foundation.
I'm Robert Colangelo, and my guest is Martha Hoover, founder and visionary behind the Pot au Chou Foundation and the restaurant chain. And we're talking about their unique approach to the restaurant business and feeding needy children in the Indy area. Martha, can you tell me what's innovative and different about your approach? There's a number of organizations out there that are trying to, you know, help feed people. Why is yours different and unique?
Well, it's different and unique for several reasons. First and foremost, you're absolutely right. There are a lot of organizations out there trying to feed children. And the real issue for us is not so much the quantity that the children are being fed, but the quality of food that the children are being fed. Our organization is different. We feed children nutrient-dense, scratch-made meals, meals that are made in our production kitchen. And that is a vast differentiator for us, is the quality of food. We also teach the children. We have what we call a Food Explorers Club. We have a curriculum that is designed to introduce the children to foods that they normally would not have access to, and to learn not just how to garden, but how to use the vegetables and produce that we are growing in our own micro farms around the city to make meals.
Martha, thank you for joining us on Green Sense. We'll have to have you back because you've generated a lot more questions and we didn't have enough time to ask them. So again, great job at what you're doing there in Indianapolis. The restaurant scene has definitely been elevated, and I'd like to think you've been a big part of raising that bar. So good luck.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
That's Martha Hoover, founder and visionary behind the network of Potashu, restaurants in the Indy area, and the Potashu Foundation to feed needy children. I'm Robert Colangelo, and this is Green Sense. Visit greensensefarms.com to subscribe to our podcast. We hope we provided you with some stimulating information that caused you to look at sustainability a little differently this week. Visit greensensefarms.com to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Thanks for listening to this edition of Green Sense. Stay fresh, keep innovating, because when you're green, you grow.
Green Sense Radio is brought to you by Green Sense Farms. We're changing the world with sustainable indoor vertical farming, growing more with less. Our leafy greens are sold live so they burst with flavor. Visit greensensefarms.com and watch us grow.
Green Sense is recorded in the Duneland ecosystem on the eastern shores of Lake Michigan. The program is copyright Green Sense Farms, all rights reserved.